Okay. One of the things I want to fly coming off of your contribution there, Dwight, is that yes, when you watch and you see and you read, you see that Congress have been pulling the social media platforms before them a lot and kind of grilling them. And that argues well all for all of us that uses the platform. Of course, the big million-dollar suits, multi-million-dollar suits that they get also help to keep them in line. But as Dwayne said, a lot of these things happen after the fact. After there's been these major breaches and so on. And I want to move over to that. The discussion on the chat is still fiery about the fingerprints. So I still want Dwayne and Dwight to answer what's the problem with putting the fingerprints on. Some people saying only criminals have things to hide. What problem with it? Some people saying I don't think it should be in an ID card. It could be somewhere else. The other major thing with the ID card, before I forget, is there was a discussion about needing it to vote. And if we can actually, within the 2 years before the next election is due, have everybody updated on it, and there may be some serious issues there. If people can't get the ID card and you need the ID card to vote, then that's going to be a massive, massive issue. But the question I want to move to, we can come back, we can look at that for sure. But I want to look at this whole idea of how safe our websites are here in Barbados. A lot of the times we do, a lot, as I said, a lot more business online. I'm going to the Internet Society forum, and they talked about how some hackers around the world hack Barbadians, particularly government websites, for fun. They do it for a game. They put up things for a couple hours with messages. And in one case, serious, and this WhatsApper actually reminds me about it. I'll read it right now, and I'll let you guys talk to us about how safe our websites are and how we can protect our information. This one says, "Good morning, Miss Elaine. I don't remember the exact time frame, but it could have been last year or maybe a bit earlier. However, you do remember the massive data breach spanning several Caribbean territories, where apparently some of the hackers stole valuable information from companies and demanded payment for the restoration of the said information. And it was reported that some organizations actually paid, for want of a better word, ransom, to get back critical information. So in light of these circumstances, what are the assurances of safety in this regard? Secondly, many countries are seeking more and more to opt out of computerized voting systems and return to paper ballots. Aren't these indicators that, as good as technology seems, it is too often compromised?" And I would need to hear from each of you on a message such as that.
I will go first because we practice building those systems, and you know it's a nightmare. Those are things that keep us up at night because it can tarnish us as a company if one of our projects was hacked. These hackers are very, very good. I've heard that there's a virus in somebody's satellites in space. These guys do it for fun, and they spend a lot of time trying to figure out all the vulnerabilities. There's lots of things that complex the issue. You have to find out what kind of technology it was built on. You know, are the companies keeping their websites up to date, right? So a lot of people use WordPress. People say WordPress is a vulnerable and prone to hacks. However, most of them, they don't update their information. Where's the information being stored? Is it leak through somebody internally? There's a plethora of things that can cause the information to be compromised. And the scary thing is that once you find a hack, hackers usually leave a back door. So they might restore you today, but they're going to leave a back door. Again, I go back to that IBM report. You know, 290 days after a hacker has hacked your information, that's when most of the time people know, because it's a very expensive thing, a very expensive undertaking. You have to have a dedicated team. You have to have mechanisms in place to try to flag as quickly as possible if there's some sort of suspicious activity on your website. If you don't have those mechanisms, you can go on and you could be hacked. I know of a site here in this country that was hacked. And I texted the owner and said, "Hey, you've been hacked." Because when I go and I try to click on a link, it started taking me to all these random weird things. And I said, "Well, they either have malware or Trojan or something like that." And they were down for approximately 2 days. Then most of the time you have to start from scratch because you have no idea where the hacker hacked. It's literally a job in itself. So this is a very complex issue. It's a expensive issue, especially for smaller companies who might want to protect the information. Then it depends on risk. If your website doesn't have any sensitive information, just a brochure that talks about your company, if you're hacked, is that such a big deal as compared to having medical or financial data? So I would say, and I say this to the team, like I don't think there's that anyone can tell you we can never be hacked, because that's just not the reality. The government in the United States have been hacked. Every major corporation has been hacked. Even Equifax and Experian that monitors your credit has been hacked. And so that is in a context. What we do is we strive to put all the mechanisms and measures in place to prevent that. And then in terms of getting back up to speed, you know, being able to get back up to speed as quickly as possible. So yes, there's a potential, but we want to mitigate the risk of being compromise on any level. And I will say this, you could also, if you look at it from a user experience as well, you could actually have your data compromised from a paper. So if I go into a store and I give my credit card information, I write it down, I have no idea where that paper is going to go. So we have to balance it, because a lot of times we do that in today's world. However, from a technical perspective, from a digital age, that is just being transferred from on a piece of paper to a cloud environment to a database. And then from the database perspective, the question that I have running through my mind is this system going to be built in the cloud, right? Is it going to be on an Amazon server, a Google server, a Microsoft server, or are we going to create our own infrastructure here and try to protect it, have more control over it? So I would say that, you know, once you put the measures in place for any company, firewalls and you limit the access to who has access to your website, then you can do a good job. Make sure that you're constantly updating your content, updating your code, and work with reputable companies. Because if you work with a company that doesn't care about you, sometimes those people actually sell your information as well. So you've got to be careful there as well.
Dwayne, I know, Dwayne, I'm listening to you. I know you're being honest, but it's just scary. Listening to you is just scary. We do, no matter what we do, let's listen to you. Let me hear from some of the others. Let me hear from some of the others.
So, as Dwayne said, there's no perfect website. There's no perfect platform. Everything, everyone can be hacked. So, how safe are you is really as safe as the measures that the hosting provider has put in place and what platforms they use to actually deliver the service. Because the perfect site today can become vulnerable tomorrow because somebody discovered some backdoor, that some middleware, which is a layer on top of the actual server that the operating system and the website sits on top of. Got discovered and leaked, and then it was utilized because the owners of the site didn't think it necessary to update that middleware. It just wasn't visible. So the end user can't keep track of all these variables, nor can the hosting provider. They are focused on the development environment. They are focused on the availability. And yes, you can put firewalls, but it's a website. It's supposed to be open to everybody. It's an open door. So everybody should come through the door. What you need to do is to scan the people coming through the door. In the same way how we have a chair burn, you have a metal detector to at least minimize the weapons coming in, but the door is open. You can't close the door. So there's so much security measures that you can put in place, but at the same time you have to balance that with availability and usability of the site. People must be able to actually make use of it. And in addition to not being able to preempt the ultimate attack, because you will get attacked, you will get hacked for whatever reason, even if it's just for sport, to say I've done it or to do something, you will get hacked. The question is, what measures do you have in place to figure out at what point that breach occurred and then go back to normal operation where that access was cut off or mitigated for future breaches via that method. So is no magic bullet, silver bullet to say this is all you need and you'll be protected. It's an ongoing process, and it's all about the risk tolerance of the user. As Duane said, is it just a brochure where if it's down, then it will stay down until it comes back up, or is it a service providing site, in which case you need to have the monitoring aspect of it, always keeping track of what's happening with the site, and not wait until your user or your customer to tell you, by the way, you've been hacked because this link not working. That at that point it's too late, because then you have no idea when it happened.
Okay, I want to ask two really important questions, and then of course I'll go to the telephone line. So those on the line, just get close to your telephone. Sherrianne, I want to ask, what are the legal ramifications, what kind of legal recourse do we have if we feel as though we've been breached, we've been compromised? What kind of things that we as citizens or businesses can do as a recourse? And I want particularly Ratna, Andrew, Dwight to talk to me about what are the things that businesses and individuals can do to protect. Now, there's no 100%, but how can we mitigate? Some of the things I've heard, you know, only use secure sites. You can go into the settings and turn off certain things. So certain things that we've been told, but I want like kind of like a checklist that listeners can use tomorrow, businesses can use from tomorrow. Businesses may need to hire a dedicated team, as Duane said, to ensure that you have somebody on it, you know, making sure as we talk about going to a paperless world and these type of things. After listening to Duane, I even more skeptical. Like, hear the old people out there, know that way I keep my money on the debate. Sherrianne, talk to us. What is kind of legal recourse, if any, do we as the public or businesses would have for these types of breaches?
Sure, Corey. So before I do, I just wanted to add to what Duane and Andrew had said thus far, in that, well, there is no way to 100% guarantee that you won't at some point face some compromise of your data. As they said previously, there are some things that you can put in place, some basic things that you can put in place to at least minimize your risk of it happening. And I think in the same way of where, let's say you're working in an organization and you might have paper files. Let's say you print something and you end up leaving it on the printer. It was a confidential document and somebody that it wasn't intended for happens to see it, you know. So yes, well, when we're speaking of data and electronic data, the same way that physical data can also be compromised as well. So I think it's important to remember that. And what I will add to as well, yes, it may be a bit scary to hear that, you know, you can't 100% protect your data. What I would say, bringing it back to the Data Protection Act, it does provide some level of protection to organizations and individuals who do undertake some of the basic measures provided by the Data Protection Act, in terms of, okay, you have put in place these measures, so you are not completely liable. That is different from, let's say, an organization who may have been careless with the information. Let's say if they had the information online and they left the files exposed, you know, or there were no passwords on that sensitive data, then they would not have taken sort of the minimum standards required in order to ensure the protection of that data. So I wanted to make the distinction there. It is not really a situation where, let's say, if you did all that you reasonably could to protect the information and for whatever reason that information might have been compromised, that you would necessarily face the full weight of the law, per se. And going on to the question now, in terms of the rights of the individuals, the rights of the individual can also, and when I say individual, I mean us as citizens. What rights do we have as citizens, right? That can conversely be said to say, what should businesses do to ensure that the data is protected. And some of the things mentioned previously by the panelists are things such as data retention. So as an individual, when you provide your data to an individual or another business entity, the business has certain obligations to say, look, this is why we are collecting your data. You should also state how long your data, that individual's data, will be stored on your system. You should give them the right to opt out of providing certain information. For whatever reason, if they don't want to provide that, you give them that opportunity. And also as well, deleting data as well. You also have to give the individual a right to ask for their information to be deleted off of your systems. So those are sort of some of the obligations required by organizations. And I think as well, the development of a data protection policy for organizations will be helpful, because at the end of the day, the Act is imposing very new obligations on us as citizens or as business owners that we have never had to contend with before. So it would be quite useful for organizations to sit down and say, look, let us provide a policy for our staff so that everybody is on the same page of where we need to go as a business to ensure that we are complying with the Act. Because the Act as well does impose some very heavy fines if you breach one of the provisions.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right on the money, because a number of people are writing asking, what about internal and staff and so on? And I'll read some of those messages a little later. I'll read those. So you're right. You're definitely right on the money right there. The second question I asked, and it was asking to the cybersecurity experts in terms of, let's talk about how people can educate themselves and what can they actually do going forward to be safer, both businesses listening and individuals listening. So Andrew, let's start with you.
So one of the biggest, I always tell my customers, users, that the weakest point in any defense system that we put in place is the actual user. And it's all about their knowledge of what the risks are, their knowledge of how to go about just using online systems, logging into sites, logging into email, and where they're carrying out those activities. So I would say the first thing as an individual, as a company, is to make sure that the users are trained and trained regularly. Sometimes the training may seem boring or irrelevant, or it can't happen, but the very things that you're learning about is what the actual hackers are utilizing to get access. And then once you've been trained, then you'll realize that a lot of the entry points for all these ransomware and malicious attacks and viruses, they come via phishing, a promise of some gain, some lottery prize or something, and you just forget about what's possible and go right into it. And at that point, you would have installed some application either on your mobile, but yes, there are attacks on mobile devices as well, or your desktops, both Mac and Windows. They're all vulnerable. So phishing is a big vector, and it just requires you to pause when something looks too good to be true. Read it and in your training, they'll tell you to hover over any link, as in move your mouse over it and read the actual link that is behind the text that you're seeing on the screen. Sometimes it looked very legit until you move the mouse just close to it, and then you see the real link is somewhere to Russia or some place in the eastern part of the world. And then another item that we can look at, which you will learn about in your training, is the passwords. We're still using ABC123. We're still using just these basic passwords. And then to make it worse, we're using that same password for everything that you do online. Mm-hmm. So once I guess your one password, then I have access to all your systems. So that's another thing. And still on the passwords, a lot of the systems that come that we use, it comes with a default password. It says, here's the password assigned to you. Please change it as soon as possible. And the password never gets changed because I'll get to it. And 5 years later, it's still there. And a lot of the access to business platforms today, even recently up the road in Jamaica or my home country, they had similar online breaches, and it was because people had access to their online system with the password left in place. So I won't take from the rest of the team, but that's the start of some of the measures that we can utilize as a simple user, as a business, just user awareness. Know what are your risks and some of the things that you can do to mitigate it. The solutions will come. So yes, we spend a lot of time developing solution and supporting and so on, but it all starts with what are you protecting? So it comes right back to the weakest link, the user.
I like that because we can't control the hackers. As Dwayne said, they're really good, but we can control our behavior, you know?
Correct.
Dwight coming.
Yeah, I agree with Andrew as well too, but for me, I see a proper cybersecurity stance or overall security stance for a business really starts with strategy. It really starts with understanding exactly what you have and what you want to protect. And knowing the importance of this, these three items, for example, are my crown jewels, my key bits of information that I want to protect and ensure that by all means necessary, they're protected. And from then on, you could then have a tiered approach to security to lesser information that's not necessarily as crucial to your business in terms of survival and also in terms of protecting persons with any sensitive information that might be still within these systems or data sets, right? And once you have that strategy in place, is then you could best plan out exactly what's necessary. How could you just allocate your resources in terms of manpower, training, any technical capabilities that could secure information in an adequate manner? That's how you could then structure it appropriately because you have a sense of what's most key. And you protect what's most key first and then others in a lesser format. And then once you have that strategy in place, it's then a matter of having all the other pieces. But to say the language from my work from Deloitte, we say secure, vigilant, resilient, right? So secure is saying that you have adequate processes in place such that you can protect your data with having adequate password for policies and requirements, having adequate systems in place that could if there's something that is a compromise, you could then flag it or prevent it from even happening. The second part is vigilant, so that if a system detects something that happened or there's any bit of incidental compromise or any suspicion of compromise, there's some way to get a respond and have people respond and maybe shut down the system if there's a possible incident of compromise in that situation. And the last piece with this resilient is then if something actually happens, then you have all the resources, the people, the backups necessary to restore information and get back up to operating as necessary once it happens. So, but the key part overall in terms of being strategy, secure, vigilant, resilient is starting first with the strategy. And that starts with understanding exactly what you have as a business, as a person, and protecting that first and most crucial bit of information first. And then the rest, as Andrew mentioned, it will come. You can then build a solution that's more tiered towards lesser important things, and then importantly, spend and get the most value out of security, protecting what's most important first.
Okay, good. Ratner, you want to add anything to that? That was a lot to think, but anything that you want to add right there?
Yes, I would like to have my background is in programming and everything. Mm-hmm. The thing that amazes me the most is people always budget for building a system, and then there's often no budget to actually maintain it. So, and maintenance is a very big part of keeping your site secure, updating the software, and also looking at. And most of the times I also found that people do not want to learn the system they have been given. They're usually reluctant or shy about learning it. And they should, now with the COVID-19, a lot of businesses are moving online and they're getting a website built and everything. And one of the things they also have to remember is beyond getting a website to ask the person who built the site for them, you know, about security, how is the information being secured? Where is my website hosted? Is it in a good place? Is there any firewall that has been put on my site? there are all these questions they should not be shy about, and they should ask, and they should definitely allocate budget to make sure their site is being kept up to date in terms of security standards, and also what sort of information their website is capturing and holding or saving on their system. If you're an e-commerce site, you have to make sure you're not holding onto anyone's credit card information. Because if you are compromised, you are compromising another person's financial information, and it might open you up for lawsuits and legal liability down the road. So they just have to be very careful with who they are working, and also to make sure that they know enough about how their site is being secured. Some of the crazy things I have seen in the past was they do not know the people or the team that they were working with. And when we went in to review their site, we saw the person who built this website for this company, they also built a backdoor for themselves. In case things don't go well, they could go in and do whatever it is to their website. So they just have to be careful who they're working with and educate themselves about what's being given to them.